Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to Going Off Track with your host, Benny Horowitz.
That's it.
Live from New Jersey.
That's what I'm talking about. Come on, Brad. Hey, Brad, I heard a great expression today. You want to hear it?
Do I?
Yeah.
Sure. Let's hear it.
It goes, third time's the charm. I never heard that before.
I don't believe that.
That's true.
I don't believe you.
So, John the Ghost. Oh, no. It's my brother. Should I answer it?
It's not the charm. Yeah. Can I hear him?
Hey, I'm doing a podcast intro right now wearing a bat mask. How are you?
Mini Batman mask. For those of you who cannot see this, Benny is wearing a children's size Batman mask.
Can I give you a call back? All right. Love you.
He's sitting in an obvious upstairs room backed by lingerie mannequins.
I was explaining the superheroes to my son the other day, and in explaining Batman, I realized that he's kind of just like an insane rich person.
Yeah.
With like deep. Like psychological problems.
Dude, even my son glommed onto this. He totally got it. He was like, bless him. He's a Marvel man like me. But he was like, so Batman, like, his thing is basically being rich, right? His power, his superpower is that he's rich. I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Like, born rich. Something awful happened to him, sure.
Give them motivation.
But it's like he's had everything for so long, he couldn't take one loss. Couldn't take one hit. I had to take over the world because of it, you know?
It was a pretty big hit.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Tough one. Not easy to watch when I was a kid. I was like, oh, this is supposed to be a fun movie, right? Oh, good. Dead parents. That's cool.
It's how you start every Disney film, right?
Oh my God. I'm still haven't recovered from The Lion King. I might put together a class action lawsuit of people like me against Disney for The Lion King. I didn't need that. I didn't need to know Uncle Scar and the things he did could exist in the world yet. You dupe a small child into thinking he killed his own father? Jesus Christ.
That's pretty cruel.
Fucked up. I'm still not recovered. If anyone is interested in jumping on this class action lawsuit against Disney on my behalf,
go to BennyVersusDisney.org.
I'll take on the big man. Come on. That's why we have a Patreon, right?
We do. Patreon.com/goingofftrack, yeah. Where you can give us money and we'll give you like the video to this intro because who you want to see this. You actually do want to see this because Benny is wearing a children's Batman mask for this whole intro. Mm-hmm. And like I said, with sexy mannequin. Well, right now they're just naked mannequins in the back. Oh no. One's wearing a corset. What do you call that?
Yeah. I'll bring it a little closer. Hang on.
And for all of you audio only listeners, we apologize that you cannot see the sexy corset. Oh, that's nice. Should I? I'm going to describe it. It's a beautiful black sexy corset. And if you want to see that corset, you will have to go to patreon.com/goingofftrack and give us some money. Because the truth is, this entire show is brought to you by our patrons.
Yeah, that's true.
Who we also do a fireside chat with every Thursday night. You can ask Benny any question you want and make suggestions about the show.
Really enjoying our Thursday night chats. We got a good group in there. Some interesting people starting to get to know each other. I dig it.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. John was a great interview.
Oh, yes.
One engaging character. Very steady.
I would use the word level.
Yeah, I feel like an insane punk rocker about to start when they're like 18 should go meet up with John.
Oh, yeah.
For a little like early counsel, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And again, Brad, we run into this anomaly of a perfectly functioning band, right? Which to me seems like such an insane thing that 4 or 5 people can actually just be cool. So I pose the question, you know, how do you keep a band together for 15 years with no member changes and you're all looking in the same direction? And like, what's the trick? What's the magic sauce to make this happen? And again, it's pretty easy. We're all friends. We respect each other. You know, we kind of like just are into the same things.
It's like the most boring answer you could get.
It's the second time in a month that we've gotten that answer to that question. And both people happen to be from Phoenix.
Oh, that's right.
So Zach, I posed this question to Zach from Jimmy Eat World, and he had a very similar answer, which was just this like,
wow,
something filled with like mutual respect and friendship and communication, like already so built in that both of them almost were like, yeah, like it's not that hard. You know, it's just like things, you know, the way things are.
Wow. Is there any other bands from Phoenix we could find out about?
Well, I mean, there's Sean Bennett and Andrew Jackson Jihad. And even though they're much more punk rock and subversive, Sean and Ben have been together doing this the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
So they have like kind of the same thing. I think they're very, what is it in the water? What's with Phoenicians? They're like the Canadians of the U.S. They're mild-mannered. They're tempered.
Maybe it's the lack of water.
Could be the lack of water. Could be the heat.
They got to stay chill.
I read that they had 180 days last year of over 100-degree heat.
Ugh.
So maybe they're just chill. Maybe they're just like cactus. They're like, you know, reserving their water. They're reserving their
they
energy
can't move.
For something they really need. Yeah, they're like, I can't fight with my friends. I would die. So I don't know. But it is fascinating. There is something about a Phoenician now that we have the Main and Jimmy Eat World both being these like, you know, anthropological anomalies of just bands that stay great friends and, you know, just keep going. It's cool.
I'll have to look into this.
Yeah. John was awesome. His new record is awesome. I had heard a couple songs and it was one of the things that really wanted me to get him on to discuss this album and see where his head was at. So why don't we get into the episode? It's going off track!
You have passed.
I've passed. Wait.
What?
I can't believe I just had that really actually used to happen.
What?
Where they would like make you like hold your balls and cough.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Yeah, oh yeah.
Wait, what?
You turn your head and you just give it a little
I haven't thought about that in so long. What is the actual physiological reason for making a child do that? Especially like in a row of other children being stared at by grown men.
I have no idea. I think it has something to do with hernias. At least that's what I was under the assumption of. So that's what I'm going with. I'm not sure.
Oh man. Brad, what's your assumption there?
I think just all for good fun, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. It's one of those things that somebody just started in their 20s and they're just like, you know, it's just the way we always do things, right? We got to check for scoliosis, kid. It's, grab your balls.
It's for a hernia, and it's not discontinued, dude. I think it's still the practice.
Still happening?
Yeah, I think if you're suspected of having a hernia, I think it's still possibly a test.
That's shocking. I mean, I've never even heard of a kid having a hernia.
Well, that's why you're not a doctor.
Or maybe all this testicle grabbing is the reason I've never heard of a kid having a hernia.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, maybe they just really... Oh, so hi, John.
Howdy. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So what are you up to?
I just got home from a little... I live in Arizona. And I got home from a little trip that my wife and dogs and I took up north to go see some snow, about like 3 hours away. So I had a good weekend.
Head like north into the mountains there?
Yeah. We went specifically to a little town called Pine Top. So like White Mountains area. And we got like, I think on Saturday night they had just about 10 inches of snow, which is kind of a rarity, especially where we live. Phoenix doesn't get snow. So it was nice to see for sure.
Yeah, I saw a friend of mine post an image from Houston, Texas today with a very, very light dusting saying that it is basically shutting down the entire city.
Yeah, if it rains here in Arizona, it's like, yeah, all bets are off.
Right.
You don't want to be in a car for sure.
So do you like ski or snowboard? Do you like mountain activities?
I bought a couple sleds from Ace Hardware. And yes. That was the extent of the extreme sports. I used to snowboard, but then it was just like, I don't know, I'm prone to getting hurt. So it was probably better. I've always now taking the approach of just like keeping my feet on the ground as much as possible.
Sure.
And then hoping for the best after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cutting out those extreme sports variables from the,
absolutely. Yeah. I think the last time that I did something extreme was, one of those, it's like a infinity wave. So it's like at a wave pool you can kind of like surf on it. And I dislocated my shoulder the first run. And was like, it was horrible, man.
Just so checking out, someone give me a guitar. It's bullshit.
No, it sucked. I had to get on, like, they had to yank it back into place. I didn't have a shirt on and they brought like, training, like not doctors, they're just trainees watch the whole process, and they pumped me up with like whatever that stuff was that Michael Jackson died from, and then I was like, this is amazing. And
a little dose of fentanyl just to put your shoulder back in,
propofol, or whatever the hell it is.
That's good. That sounds healthy. So I hear you got married fairly recently, right? End of last year.
I did, yeah. End of October.
Congratulations. Did you
I appreciate it.
Did you get away, or did you doing a big thing is kind of out of the cards these days. Did you have a big thing planned? Or
we did, yeah. We were supposed to be doing a big thing out here in Arizona, and for obvious reasons we had to change plans. So we did what they're in the business referring to as a micro wedding. It's a smaller wedding. So it was like 16 of us in California. Yeah. Oh,
cool. And where were you initially supposed to have like a really like mega event kind of thing?
No, it was just supposed to be a lot more people.
right.
And it was just, it wasn't all. I mean, the big problem is that we made all the deposits. So, you lose out on a bunch of money if you don't do it. So we're figuring it out.
But seriously, they didn't have like a pandemic exemption here for any of that shit?
Oh, dude, no. I guarantee you in the fine print, it was written in like, if a pandemic comes coronavirus, you're going to be screwed. Yeah. So.
Wait, what's the one that's in all of our record contracts that always, the force majeure? Isn't that what it's called? It's in every one of our contracts.
Force of God.
The act of God clause. lost. Yeah. Jesus. Yep. Wow, good for them. They got all bases covered, yeah, right?
For sure. For yeah, sure.
No for holes sure for them. So that's good. So a few months in the married life. So what have you been what are you up to on like a day-to-day basis? How are you let me ask you, John, walk me through your morning. When do okay you when do you get up? What do you drink? How do you get going? What do you like to eat? What do you do first?
So we got a pit bull puppy probably like 7 months ago.
Cool.
And the majority of the morning is spent. We probably get up at like, I mean, fortunately she now sleeps through the night, but I'm usually up at like 6:30. Okay. And I'll take her to the park, try to get some of that energy out. That probably lasts for about an hour. Mm-hmm. And then come home, eat some breakfast, maybe work out if I can. The big thing about working out is like I like working out, but I have no motivation to like do better. So it's like I got nobody there to be like, hey,
oh, I see.
Do yeah do one more, you know, right, or do right lift more weight. And it's sure like, yeah, I'm good. So
right,
it, you know, I fake a workout and then I'll probably eat a smoothie. And then I guess it's drink a smoothie, eat a smoothie. I'm not sure.
I guess it depends on how much you chop it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I fortunately kind of built like a little home studio. So it's been keeping me busy and, I've been trying to write a lot of music. So
yeah,
that kind of, that is the day. And then, 5 o'clock rolls around and I'm pretty much checked out. And then I figure out what we're going to eat for dinner. And that's about it. So
did you have the same issue? I came to a stunning realization during the pandemic. And since some of my more full-time touring slowed down is that I think I only worked out ever in my life to get ready to play. Basically.
Okay.
I think I was like getting ready to tour. It's the only thing that's ever given me enough motivation to actually get myself together is that. And once that was gone, that was, I was like, what am I doing this for? Now I have to do this for me.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know that. Did you run into the issue or are you disciplined?
I guess, especially on tour, it was always a thing where it's like, that's how I could rationalize how much I drank the night before. It's like, right, you know, the first thing you do is like move some iron around and somehow like
right
makes it all reasonable. But yeah. No, I've always enjoyed doing it. I like the way it makes me feel like, but yeah, I'm with you, especially during this process. It's been like, I could just not do that. And especially towards the last couple of months, I've been like falling back into having a few drinks every night. And it's like, you know, where before it was like, hey, we're going to do so much more. And like, we got like, I forget the brand name, but we ordered like those meals that they send you all the ingredients for. And you cook.
Right.
Because neither me or my wife enjoy cooking. So it was like, then a couple weeks of that went by and we're like, this sucks. We hate this. It was like, let's go get some bad food. So it was, yeah, I feel like I've gone through big waves of like being solid in a routine and then just like, you know, tearing the routine apart. So
yeah, sure. I mean, well, it seems like you've had a pretty, you know, prolific output in this time, with how many songs you've created and apparently how many ideas you come up with on a daily basis, as I've read, what kind of, you know, you sit down to work, what kind of creator are you? Are you someone who, sits down and hits the grind every day, or do you need to wait for flashes of inspiration and things like that to really get something down that you like? What's that process for you like?
I mean, I would say before, I guess when the idea of touring still existed and the idea that like, you know, you're only going to be home for a couple months and then you got to go back out on the road, I was never one that would really be able to write while we were touring just because of how many people were around. And it was just, you know, on the bus, you're surrounded by your band and then the crew and
Yeah.
It's like, you know, going to lunch is an ordeal. So it was sure. like, I never really made the time to ride on the road. So when I got home, I tried to maximize the time by just riding as much as I could. And I think, you know, for what I went into last year prior to the pandemic, I actually got to write for the first time, like on the road. We were in Europe and we were kind of like, outrunning the coronavirus like reports.
Oh, wow.
So we were like 2 weeks ahead of like the huge outbreak in Spain and Italy.
Okay.
And so we fortunately got home and I had had all these ideas that I had written on the road for the first time. So I took that. And then once, you know, things started to pan out and, the idea that we weren't going to be able to go back on tour sort of started to really set in.
Yeah.
I took all those ideas and I was able to like, you know, hash them out for real and not have them just sit around. So, but I guess to answer your question, I'm more so, I've never really enjoyed the idea of like, today I'm going to write a song and like, this is what I have to write about, you know, or whatever. It was always like a very natural, if it comes, it comes, and I could spend 5 days in a row on the same four bar, whatever, or, you know, whatever kind of happened. But I guess, I've tried to be more diligent with like at least showing up, you know, and at least like creatively trying to, you know, express myself, you know, cause it's definitely been a mental struggle too, you know, just
of course.
With the idea. And I've talked to a bunch of friends, from different bands that are just, you know, a huge portion of your identity comes from sometimes being on the road and being on stage and, you know, that whole game. And it's been certainly a, you know, you've been forced to kind of examine who you are outside of that world. You know, I think it's been a really great thing because at least for me, it's always been, man, I can't wait to spend more time at home. I can't wait to spend more time at home, you know?
Right.
And I love what we do and I love being on the road, but then it's like, you finally get that and it's, you know, it's definitely a shock. It's like, wow, I have all this time and, you know, but it's been nice for sure.
It's really interesting. I mean, I've seen a lot of people go through it now that you mention it, how I feel like a lot of, creators and writers are almost not looking for things to write about, but the road and the experience and all the different places and conversations and everything you get from that sort of can spark a lot of avenues for creation. And the impetus kind of comes from this external place. Have you found in the last year that without that exposure, that the songwriting and the lyrics are coming from potentially like a more internal place?
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, you're totally right. It's like when you have, again, the experience of just travel in general and being able to see and hear, people from other parts of the world. And, you know, once that was gone, it's like now, writing from a different perspective. And again, I mean, obviously it goes without saying coronavirus it sucked for everybody on so many different levels. But, you know, like we were talking about, I did get married. So it's right. that weird juxtaposition of like, you know, falling in love and having love and embarking on this new sort of chapter of my life with another person.
Yeah.
I sort of have found that has been inspiring. And, you know, the idea of you know, like trying to muster up struggle to write about.
Right.
It doesn't really go away because I feel like internally, I think everyone just carries around different levels of sadness, and that's not meant to be like super emo, but it's you know, I think it's, it's just been, and I guess simultaneously the idea of being in love and then, you know, being stuck in this house with that person all the time.
Right.
You know, there's really great. I mean, there's a lot of great not to get songwritery, but there's a lot of great material right there. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, not very often, especially a touring person like you, are you just, I mean, you're really tossed into the fray there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you certainly benefit, especially when we started dating, you benefit from, she was living in San Francisco at the time. So you benefit from like being apart and then coming together again and sort of having those like butterflies and then, you know, not having those anymore, you know, they're still there. It's just, you know, in different forms. So sure. Yeah, it's interesting. I think I told myself that I was going to read a lot more books, but yeah. but I didn't. So I have to find inspiration somewhere else. So.
So no cooking, no reading.
No cooking. F it, dude. F
what
it
are you
all.
Doing over there?
No working out. No bettering
myself. Yeah, what's
myself.
Going on over there? Sounds slovenly. No, I'm just
kidding. Watching Hell's Kitchen. And
I went into the British baking show. That's been my vibe on this one. I like it. It's my wife says, she's like, it's boring. There's not enough conflict. You know, because they're British and they're so nice to each other. But I think that's the reason I like it. It makes it straight vanilla television where I really don't feel bad about anything, you know?
There you go. Yeah. It could be the Canadian baking show. And then it would be like, you couldn't watch it because it was so nice.
They wouldn't even, it would never end because they'd never kick anybody off.
Nobody would lose. Yeah.
Just be the same 12 people for 10 seasons. You know, you all judge for yourself.
Like, oh, that was fun. Thanks for participating.
Yeah, it's all delicious. So your now wife moved from San Francisco. Do you have and you're in Arizona still? Like, what is it, Phoenix area?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a big network? Do you have a pretty strong like family system still going on in Phoenix?
Yeah, yeah. The majority of mine are out here. And hers kind of are spread out a little bit, but mostly in California. So I definitely got, and I actually, the neighborhood we bought our house in is like only a couple streets away from the house that I grew up
oh,
in.
Oh, no shit. Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of a trip to kind of be back in this neighborhood and, you know, sort of see it with new eyes. It's like I can point out to her, which I know she's sick of by now. It's like, that's right. Where like me and David found, you know, right. Some porn and we took it over to the railroad tracks. And she's like, dude, just ease up on the nostalgia a little bit. So
yeah, you're fucked next time you go out to California. Like you're going on the tour, John.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I do that to my wife all the time. I'll be in like some innocuous town. Like, oh my God, I did this. I'm like, yeah, you got to remember, guy, nobody cares about this. Yeah. Nobody but you. It's a very self-indulgent thing to do.
Absolutely.
So what's your background like? I mean, particularly like with music, did you have music in the house? Was there music from your parents? And kind of at which point do you see where it really like maybe grabbed your attention and took your focus?
Yeah, I mean, I think firstly, it was in the house for sure. My dad is like a huge audiophile. He's like loves to sort of be the one to like bust out the most obscure bands and like give cool. you facts about them. And nice. So I was always around that and always sort of tried to follow his lead. And I would say like my real sort of like my personal discovery with like finding music sort of stemmed from my older cousins. They all played guitar and they were a couple of years older and they were like the cool, you know, the cool cousins. So right, I wanted to follow the footsteps. And it wasn't until I think I was 12 when my parents got me a guitar, but I really didn't, it really didn't. It was just a guitar at the time, you know, it wasn't really like it didn't take over and consume the way that I think it does for a lot of people. Sure. And I had sports kind of going the whole time. I played a lot of baseball growing up. So it was like, it was always like sports first. And then high school rolled around. I had friends in bands, one band specifically that was in Arizona, and I went to all their shows.
What were they called? Like my best.
They went through a couple different iterations. There was Bad Motivation.
like it.
Then briefly they were the Countdown.
Okay.
And then they landed on Kill Courtesy for their last remaining months or years they were a band. Okay.
I think I was stuck on number two.
There you go. So I would always go. I would go to like their practices, and they were just like good homies. Excuse me. So that kind of like sparked my love for like live music and being around it and going to see other bands. And I would go to concerts with them. And then it wasn't really until I started creating stuff on my own at home via that program Fruity Loops back in high school. Uh-huh. And I was just kind of bullshitting and making like silly beats and stuff like that. And then when my brain kind of was like, hey, you're writing songs, to an extent, then I guess it wasn't until college when I wanted to try out for the band that I'm in. So it was a long time, but it was kind of like I just jumped into the deep end and we just started making music and being on the road.
Tell me a little bit about your baseball career. Brad's not going to like this, but I'm going to guess. I'm a baseball fan. You're very long, you're lean.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you could have been a good pitcher.
I would rarely pitch. I played a lot of shortstop.
Oh, all right.
I played short until my senior year, and there was a younger kid that was better at me, so they moved me to third.
Oh, that's the you pulled the Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez move.
Yeah, a little hot corner action. So it was but to be honest, there was like, I don't know if y'all played sports growing up, but there was like sort of that that epiphany moment where I was like, yo, I'm really not as good as the best guy on the team. Like, this isn't going, I'm not going past this. So I would say junior and senior year, when I realized that they had a PA system at the baseball stadium,
right,
that we played in, I took control of that. Even though I was like playing, actually like set up the PA and I let everybody have walk up songs.
nice.
my good buddy was the announcer.
Okay.
So it was like, I was more concerned about what I was going to walk out to, what we were going to warm up to.
Right.
I think I was the actual game. So
what did you come out to?
Oh dude, I had
mixed it up.
There's a hardcore band from Tucson called The Bled.
Oh yeah.
And I think I had, the song was Spit Shine Sonata by The Bled.
Wow. That's pretty far reaching for a baseball game. That's cool. Yeah.
I had that. And then I had Project Pat.
Okay.
A Memphis rapper had a song called Chicken Head that I walked out to too. So I was all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And then, so you went to college and tried out from there. So the main was already, was it the main yet, or was it a?
No. So they, Garrett, our bass player, and our drummer, Pat, had been in bands in high school, and like my good buddies, they had done a bunch of battle of bands against some of their old bands. So they were called the Kerosene Kids at one point.
Okay.
And then they were the Seasons Company.
Okay.
And then there might have been one or two I'm forgetting of, but but they were looking for a singer, and I just I got drunk, and basically the whole like the whole triangle works like Tim, our manager, has been one of my best buds since sixth grade.
Oh, cool.
So Tim's youngest brother is Patrick, who is in the main. He plays drums for the main. So that was kind of like I told Tim, hey, I want to try out for your brother's band. And he just passed it off as I was just drunk at a party. And then the next morning I woke up and I went over to Pat's house and I played a song by a band called Ivory on the guitar very poorly. And he's like, "Hey man, you're in." Like, wow. All right, cool. Now what? So
that's cool. So, I mean, I can imagine for a younger person, you know, you're playing sports and you're connected into those worlds. What do you think gave you kind of the, you know, the confidence or the, you know, the reach to go after something like that?
I mean, it's actually drunk. Weird because I was drunk. That was it. I can't pinpoint exactly which alcoholic drink it was.
Right.
No, there were two times, like, when I would go to band practice for my buddy's band, I would always inevitably, like, kind of mess around at the very tail end of the practice. And right, I would grab the mic and
fuck around.
I would be goofy with them. We would play Finch and we'd play stuff like that. And,
okay.
So there was a time when somebody was like, "Hey, that actually sounds pretty good." And I can exactly remember that day. Mm. And then I remember, another day being in the car with a bunch of my buddies. And, I was huge into, The Starting Line.
Okay.
When we were in high school. And yeah. I remember singing one of his parts and, like, I didn't think I was doing it for real, but I, like, you know, somebody was like, "Hey man, that sounded pretty cool." I'm like, "That's cool." "Oh, cool." So those, and they were so insignificant for everybody else. You know, it was like moments in time that nobody that was ever in the car would have ever thought about again, you know, right, but for me, I think I latched onto it and, it just kind of took a little nudge to actually give it a try. And that was kind of, it's weird even thinking about, because I haven't really thought about those actual moments in such a long time, but those were actually like the little bits that I think gave me just enough confidence. You know, I'm still, even to this day, working on being confident and being, you know, even in like live setting, you know, being more comfortable on stage and whatnot. But yeah, that's interesting because I haven't thought about, you know, but when you said it, it's like, oh shit, man, those were the two kind of times. So
that's cool. Well, that's a highlight too, to anyone's listening, you know, raise your kids to support your friends and be positive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Right.
Cause
it could have taken, so, like, case in point. Okay. I have a funny, quick turn off from here that made me not a singer, which I was in a band called Full Circle Swing at the time. Always a drummer. I've always been a drummer. But I used to fashion myself as someone who could do some backups, get in there. And I remember I got in the studio and the line was "Sun on My Face." And I was supposed to do like I don't know. I'm not even going to try. But for some reason, I just soul man the thing. And I got in this vocal booth and I go like, "Sun on my face." And I, like, you know, really like blues manned it for some fucking reason.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like 16. I don't know why. And, you know, I, like, look up and all my, like, little fucking gangster Jersey friends who I'm in the band with are just losing their shit in the studio. You know what I mean? Dying, like deaf comedy jam laughing, you know, their legs are in the air. And I'm just like, all right, fuck this. Headphones off. And that was it.
That was
pretty much it. Like, I've taken some other stabs later in life, but no, that was pretty much it. So,
and that's all it took. Yeah.
That's it.
That's the thing. That's all it took. And yeah,
man, I needed more.
That could have changed the course of everything for you.
I know. I could have been a blues man. I could have owned my own song by now. It's just funny, man. Well, it's interesting. I mean, you were so young, you know, and it seems like, you know, your life kind of took hold in the direction of the main and being a touring musician, you know, fairly quickly after that. And, you know, I was wondering, like, since you were essentially like a kid and, you know, going right into being in sort of a well-known band and touring and starting your course, what's that been like for you, like, just as a person? And at any point, have you felt like you had to, like, catch up on some different kind of life or missed any version of life you were curious about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially now, I'm 32 now. So we started when I was 19.
Right.
And it was, you know, there just inherently are a lot of things that you miss if you're away all the time. Yeah. You know, if it's a cousin's wedding or the birth of someone's child or whatever it is, or the funeral of, a grandparent or something, whatever. I think especially now it's interesting because I have found that I love spending, time with my parents. It's something that I really didn't, not that my parents and I haven't always been close. Right. Like we've been close, but especially being in high school and then your early 20s, at least for me, I didn't always want to hang out with them,
Right. Yeah.
I loved them.
Sure.
But it wasn't like, it wasn't like, hey, I want to go have some beers with my dad. It was like,
right.
There's my dad, it's like,
right.
I don't know. It wasn't like, let's chill. And now it's totally, I don't want to say like I'm making up for lost time, but like my parents live really close and, I just love spending time with them. So
that's awesome.
I don't know, as far as growing up, it's just been part of life. So it's been, of course there are things that I probably wish I could have, told myself back then, like maybe, kill some of your ego a little bit more, or don't worry so much about all this other whatever, like, I don't know. There's certainly things that I wish I could have known back then, but that's part of it all, and a lot of people sort of cringe when they look back at yearbooks. And I feel like that's just, it's just part of being alive, is being able to wear your hair like an idiot and then, take your lumps and make mistakes. And I feel like, especially now, like, not to like veer too far off course, but on the drive home, my wife and I were just talking about, cancel culture that whole thing. And we were just saying how important it is to be able to make mistakes and to be able to learn from them and to grow from them as an individual and as a society. And, I've been very fortunate to be in a band and have that be my job for almost 15 years now. And it's, but there's plenty of mistakes that I've made as an individual and plenty of mistakes that we've made as a band. And we've been so fortunate to kind of, hopefully better ourselves because of those things. And, I don't even know what the question was. I don't even think I answered it. So.
No, it's okay. It doesn't even matter. I mean, it's interesting you say about cancel culture, because I mean, the one thing I even heard a statement, you were talking about some old lyrics you had when you were younger, and and you're like, yeah, I was 19. They were kind of stupid. What are you going to do? Like, and I think a lot of the thing that we're dealing with cancel culture is owning up to it,
absolutely
the people who can take some personal responsibility, eat a little crow, which is not attractive these days for some reason, and can actually, open themselves up to be vulnerable and wrong and move forward, And I feel like if people are authentically doing that, I think you're forgiven often, unless your trespasses are really that serious,
Absolutely. Yeah. It's an interesting time. And cause we were sort of, it all spawned from listening to this podcast. We listened to this podcast called Criminal, and the episode was on somebody that made up a fake rumor about a real estate agent and essentially ruined her career for a minute. And basically said that she was cheating on somebody, on her husband with another guy, whatever.
Yeah.
It was like,
that's dirty.
It was like, and then that of course was like, yeah, I mean, the internet's crazy, man. And we're just, we had nothing but time on the drive. So sure. I think you're 100% right. Empathy is not lacking. It's just, it's not sexy, You know, it's like,
right.
It's definitely not sexy anymore. And I think that it's really important, like you're saying, to be authentic and to try to, I don't know, try to learn, try to be better for sure.
Yeah. I think maybe it's just tapping into like the part of every person listening that knows they fucked up too. You know, if you're able,
for sure.
If you're able to relate it in such a way that you see it in your head, you're like, oh, that could have been me. You know,
yeah,
like, could have just easily been me.
Yeah, they were talking about the Hall of Fame in baseball, and
right.
You know, my dad was like, "Well, what do you think about steroids and all this?" And like, well, we inevitably talked about it for a while, but
sure,
it's like interesting to think like people passing judgment on other people's character are just humans themselves, and there was some. A baseball journalist or something like that that had been accused of molesting children when he was, you know,
right.
When yeah. he was back in the day. I don't know if you heard about that, but
no.
Then I think he got wiped from the like Philadelphia Hall of Fame for journalism or something like that.
Course,
it's just really interesting.
Of course, it's Philly. No,
but it's just, you know, humans are flawed. I think that's the biggest thing. And it's only the mistakes that make you, you know, who you are. So,
yeah. Well, you just addressed one of the biggest highlights, I think, of cancel culture. Again, it's a sports comparison, but I watched, you know, as a New York Yankees fan, I watched Alex Rodriguez for years and years be one of the best players in baseball, one of the most hated individuals in baseball, essentially because everyone fucking knew he was lying the entire time. It was just,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, on the same exact team with someone who also won World Series and the same exact program was Andy Pettit, who did steroids, did HGH. And after he got caught, he did a press conference. I was like, you know what? It was a mistake. Sorry. Never do it again. Blah, blah, blah. And no one even knows he did it. That's
for
how,
sure.
You know, he didn't wag his finger at anybody. And it's just this. Yeah. We're just highlighting, I guess, what we even talked about 10 minutes ago. Just own up to your fucking mistakes, you know?
Absolutely. Sorry for throwing the wrench in there. We got all off.
Oh, John, but this program is called Going Off Track.
There you go.
Yeah, I want you lying down, shoes off. I hope you have some warm to drink. Yeah, everything. Let's go on a ride, baby. But I was wondering, in the same context of, you know, you growing up, I can imagine a lot of your fans started young and are now adults dealing with a
yeah.
very different stage of life, just like you are. And I know how important fans are to you in the band. And I was wondering if you feel the need to create a different type of soundtrack or roadmap or even, I guess, just the messaging behind your songs. Like, do you consider that aspect of it these days?
I don't know. I think I always will subconsciously. I think, you know, it's people listening to our music. That's the only reason we're able to make it. So inevitably their influence will somehow creep in. Mm-hmm. But I think that the neatest part to me, as the person that writes the lyrics and the majority of the songs, is just that they've allowed us the freedom to sort of explore all sorts of different sounds. Mm-hmm. And we've done different, we've taken different approaches with every single record, just from a standpoint of not wanting to recreate something we already did.
Sure.
We did a record in Nashville, to tape, which was like, you know, probably, too ambitious, but
okay.
You know, people liked it enough.
What studio was that at?
Oh gosh, now I'm gonna, the studio's not there anymore. We did the record with Brendan Benson.
Oh, cool.
And he was,
ooh, nice.
He was like kind of, it's actually there was a studio that I think Jim James from My Morning Jacket had either owned or was definitely just working out of there. But anyways, we've been there recently and the whole building got knocked down, which is kind of a shame. But, I think to the question, it's been really amazing to have the ability to feel like you can not necessarily do no wrong, but not have the fear of disappointment outweigh like your decision making. Sure, so it's like, yeah, I think we've just been really lucky. And what's really a trip is that, especially being on the road, like having seen some of the same people for 14 years, you know, and see people having children and people getting married and people, you know, whatever life has thrown their way as well. It's been, I don't think a lot of people understand too, just the idea that like, it's kind of just as crazy for us as it is for them, you know, to like, to go to these places and to see their faces is like, is comforting as well. You know, it's like, even if there's, you know, however many new people, you like see somebody that has, you know, a familiar face that you've seen however many times. And sure. It just reminds you that you're in that place and you're, I don't know, there's something comforting about it for sure.
Now this only pops in my head because there's someone in my head about this, but in all the cities in all the world, who is like the fan of yours that stands out the most for whatever reason? It could be someone you know, don't know, maybe physically looks super cool. Like, is there anyone who rocks like, you know, cool outfits?
Oh, man. I mean, even when you just say it, there's like multiple faces.
Right.
That come to mind. It's like, I don't know. That's a really good question because it's, yeah, I don't know. They're a handful, and some of them are like, you can kind of count on saying, like having a similar story every time you see them. Whether it's like,
right.
You know, however they got there and how long it took them to, right. You know, get there and whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's like, there's not like, there isn't like one specific, it's definitely like it's spread out for sure.
We had like a sadomasochistic couple.
Okay.
Yeah. They used to show up. I forget what city in Germany, but it was a city in Germany.
Of course.
they would always chill like right in front, you know, like right on the rail. A man and a woman, obviously a couple, both with shaved heads. And through the course of the show, we can only imagine because they never like hung out or talked. Like we've only seen these people. So I never actually met them. But I can only imagine the man was following very specific orders through the show. Cause at a random point in the show, he would just reach over and like rub a nipple or like, you know, do something else where I think he was like being instructed. And they would always stand right in front of the bass player. So it became like a joke. They were really there for him, you know? They're very cool. Like they were really supportive fans and knew the words, but they were just up to this, you know.
Sure. Yeah. We definitely don't have any anything like that.
You're only 32, John, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
your fans are just getting into their 30s. You got to give them another 5-10 years for sadomasochism, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, one of the cool things about the Main is, you know, you've been a band a long time and you haven't had a member change since 2008. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it would have been, I mean, within the first 3 months of the band.
Yeah.
So there were two guitar players. And once we decided that we wanted to go on tour, they bailed. And then that's when we got the lineup that's still together today.
So, I mean, from the outside, it seems like a pretty steady and friendly ship. And I was wondering, you know, not a lot of bands can make it that long and not a lot of bands can make it with the same people. So what have you learned over the years on how to maintain that and ways to communicate with each other and ways to interact with each other that have been useful for you in keeping this all together?
I mean, fortunately, like I said, I've known our manager since sixth grade. the very first time I knew he was my friend, I was standing in PE class at the urinal peeing, and he kicked my butt, so I peed all over my shirt, and I had to have the pee shirt the whole class. But to have him BFF. And his brother, exactly, yeah. To have them sort of on our team is that they've kind of been the two of them, their minds, especially when it comes to just all things. Like not business, but just all things minus music to our band, if that makes sense. They're 24/7 that. And I think the big thing for our band specifically is just that we like being around one another. Mm-hmm. Like we enjoy a lot of the same things. We laugh at a lot of this. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's weird to not have been around them for a minute. We still have the group text going and stuff. And so we're sending like ridiculous shit back and forth all the time. But it's, we genuinely like being around one another. So, and we've kind of been so lucky to have crew on tour that we really enjoy being around as well. A lot of the people that we bring out are from Arizona, and it's just, it's never felt like a job. Like it really honestly hasn't. It's just felt like, you know, just we're so lucky to be doing it. And it's there is no secret, you know. It's like, because we're still figuring it out.
Sure.
You know, it's like our guitar player just moved to California, to Los Angeles. So it's like we're entering that new, how to navigate that whole situation. And it'll definitely be a learning curve, but I think just enjoying each other's company is the biggest factor.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's great. When it comes to decision making, is there kind of like a final say person, or is this like a truly democratic band as far as that goes?
I'd like to think it's pretty democratic. Cool. And I think a lot of us are on the same page when it comes to a lot of things. So it makes a lot of this stuff easy or easier. You know, whatever it is, set lists or music videos or, you know, first single releases or whatever it is. I think we're all sort of on the same wavelength. So, but it's definitely if majority vote doesn't fly, then it's probably not going to happen.
That's cool. All right. So say it's 2 weeks from now. Okay. We're in the beginning of March. And you look up and Live Once is starting to look like a hit single. It's everywhere. The kids love it.
You're going to be a star.
You're going to be a star, kid. There's droves of people, money, the whole deal. What do you do? Like, what's the ideal version of this for you? Like, or what's the first thing you do with unfettered fame?
To be honest, that ship has sailed. I feel like I've lost enough hair now where I'm like, I'm not going to be the poster boy for anything. So unless it's like keeps.com, which I keep getting ads for on my phone.
What's that one? Is it?
It's something about your erection and your hair simultaneously. Oh, or something. Oh, I'm just kidding.
You're falling into that demo now, huh?
No, I mean, to be honest, it's The big thing to me at this point is just the ability to put out music and have some semblance of an audience, like people that are listening. And I think that as long as I can just keep doing that and it's still fun and I enjoy doing it, then I won't have to go be go be something else. So I'm not sure. I think I got so, like, when our band on our second record signed to Warner Brothers, it was like, you have this idea probably from movies and just TV, right, to where like, oh, you're going to be famous. You know, what's that going to be like? It's right, like, right. Well, to be honest, everything that I've read, heard, seen about fame sounds fucking pretty awful, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think after being promised like so many things and like, you know, by adults that are like, yeah, you know, you're right. you're going to be famous and rich and this, you're going to be, you know, whatever. I'm just so, again, humbled by the fact that I'm still able to do it. And if Lived Once or any of my solo stuff got huge, then I would just buy a bunch of Bitcoin or something. I don't know.
That's the plan. Well, you can be bald. I mean, I'd like to at least, I mean, there's Moby, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Bon Scott from AC/DC.
Howie Mandel.
Yeah. I mean, I heard the guy from the Scorpions never took his hat off because there's nothing under there. And, you know, he wrote Rocky Like a Hurricane. So I think.
Yeah. So there could be a lane.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, here's a funny little. Oh, I'm sorry, Brad.
I was going to just ask about that record because the John the Ghost, that's the second John the Ghost record. Is that right?
So it's I put out like five songs in 2016. So this one is, I guess, technically the first record.
Was it all
but
made
the second
during,
batch of songs?
Was it all made during COVID, or was it kind of in the works?
Yeah. So I had when I was writing on tour for the first time, like I was saying, that was like I was intending for everything to be written for the new main record, and I kind of wrote so much that I got two records out of it. So once we did the main record, which is done and it'll be coming out this year as well, I went back with a buddy, Matt Keller, who's a producer here in Arizona, and we just kind of grinded out the nine songs that you hear.
And was it like, because you talked about setting up a little home studio, was a lot of it, did you create a lot of it all by yourself or?
Yeah. And then when we went and sort of disassembled the songs and tore them apart, it was like, you know, I have a very limited knowledge when it comes to guitar playing. So it was like everything you hear is like, it's kind of caveman in the sense that like it's not like wailing solos and like featured guitar. So yeah, I tried to skate by as much as I could.
That's cool. I like, it's a cool vibe. I just was wondering, cause it feels a little sort of more, I don't know, just maybe personal than some of the other stuff and like the main stuff. I don't know. I just was curious if it was like one of those sort of shelter in place and like just bust out your own songs kind of vibe.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a different, it's definitely a different vibe doing things when you know that like you're the kind of like you're the only decider of what is being put out, you know. I don't really, you know, not having the other guys to be like, yeah, that's not really that cool, you know. It was just, I think that's what makes it more fun as far as the song choices and the song arrangements and all that. It was just more so about just getting ideas out and done as opposed to like bashing your head against the wall for weeks on end and like obsessing with certain parts. It was just like, I think we spent a day on every song. So
that's going to be like a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fresh. I think it ends up being kind of fresher that way often.
I think so too.
Maybe that's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be able to apply it and just make more music. You know, I think that's, I don't know. People are saying a lot of different things about touring and it's, who knows? So,
no.
Oh, speaking of not touring, that I've been pretty obsessively listening to that song Drive. That one's really, really got me hooked and it's a great song. And there's a lyric, you know, usually I'm asking people what's their craziest thing on tour, what's the wildest thing you did. But there's a line in that song where you talked about, you know, looking at the Midwest sky, looking at Jackson in the dead of the night. And it kind of made me think of like those really, you know, special moments on tour when you realize, like, this isn't just music. This is sort of like, you know, existential adventure, and you see something that really blows you away. Is there anything that stands out as the most beautiful thing you've ever seen on tour?
Oh my God. I don't even know. That's a great question. That's like, the first thing that came to mind when you said, like, being in, you know, being on the road late at night is we'll sometimes, on tour, we'll have just like long, long drives. So like nobody's getting crazy. Everybody's getting wine drunk. And it's like, the lights are all down and somebody puts on, some moody song and we stare out the windows for a while.
It's the best. The fishbowl.
It is the best. Yeah, dude. It's, I don't know. There have been so many moments. We saw Stonehenge from like a distance on the road in a little van on a drive that like the sun was kind of coming up. So like we caught sunrise and it was like
that's awesome.
Really majestic. And I don't know. That's a really, what about you?
Well, there's a bunch. I mean, you know, I have sort of the innocuous one. It's just when you do an overnight drive. At any point, there's something about like 4:30 to 5 in the morning, you know, especially if where you are is flat with just the sun just starting to creep over and you get to watch the colors, like, you know, fill in the day like that. That's really stunning. I think the one that stands out for me the most is I wound up, it's a long story and not one I'm willing to share anymore, but I wound up an old band called The Killing Gift. We were in Niagara Falls and we decided to, to age myself, this is still pre 9/11 where you could just like, you didn't even need a passport to go over the bridge back in the day. You needed just like an American ID, you know?
And
that night, you know, we went into the Canadian side, we were partying and I wound up alone, and started walking back. And I literally wound up like in the middle of the bridge, 1 foot in Canada, 1 foot in America, watching like the sunrise go over Niagara Falls. And I was young still, I was maybe 19 or 20. And I do see it as one of those, like, I think I'd already known that this was what I had wanted to do, but that was one of those things where it's like, all right, like I'm probably a lifer, you know, like
that's incredible.
I want to spend all the rest of my time trying to find this moment again, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome.
So last episode we had Brendan Kelly from the Lawrence Arms on. Wonderful guy, wonderful interview. But we spent a good portion of the interview knocking the Warped Tour because he happened to have a very negative experience on it and went toe-to-toe with Kevin Lyman. It was a whole deal. But the main, and you guys, you know, it was a very good tour for your band and a big part of maybe not what made your success, but it was like a vehicle for your success at a certain time. What's your thoughts on the Warped Tour and Kevin, and do you have any really memorable moments from it?
I mean, if we're strictly speaking on like just what the tour could do for a band that took advantage of the tour,
right,
in the sense of like trying to hustle, and it was one of like the most opportune places to try to reach a wider audience,
yeah,
if there ever was,
sure,
you know, especially for bands like our band. And we had heard a story about a band called Mayday Parade that had sold, that they weren't on the tour, but they followed the tour. And like one of their big stories is the fact that they sold over 10,000 records on Warped Tour, but not being on the tour.
Wow.
So they just hustled and they followed the tour in a van and trailer. And
that's crazy.
Just talk to as many people as they could. So
and they wound it was up being like, a very, very successful band.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was really, I don't know. It was like, at, you know, it was in our scene, it was a notch on the belt if you could get on the tour. And then it was in our eyes that, like, then whatever you did was up to you after that. It was like, once you're there, you can kind of take the opportunity at however you want. So some bands would just kind of, play and then go away. And that would be kind of it. Your day was like a 30-minute set and that was it. Sure. And our band, we tried to make the most of it. And it's really funny because there was like a negative connotation that was associated with it. Like, oh, they're a Warped Tour band.
Right.
You know, like a lot of people would be like, oh, the Mayans, a Warped Tour band. And we were like, it was a confused feeling at first. Cause it was like, well, does that mean that you're just writing us off? Like you sound like all these other bands. Mm. And it was, I understood it more in the sense that, like, yeah, we just did we did Warped Tour a bunch. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That was like that was where it was, at least that's how I interpreted it. But I think for our band, it was just a really great place to try to reach people that we couldn't, you know. And that was like when our band started, we didn't go on tour because a couple of the guys were still in high school. So,
oh, wow.
The way that we reached people was online,
right.
And we tried to talk to as many people as we could on MySpace. And that's what we did for hours every day. And I equated a lot to that beginning part of our band. And, you know, we inevitably did the tour, I think probably 7 times or something like that. And by the end we got to play on main stage, but we still took advantage of the days. And, you know, we did 2-hour meet and greets and crap like that, where it's just like, you know, you could sort of rest on the idea that you've done it so many times and that you deserve something or you're owed something. But I think for us, it was just really important to always take it as an opportunity and not to take it as like a...
Not take it for granted.
Exactly. Not take it for granted. Absolutely.
It's smart. You sound like you were much more well-adjusted than most of the punk rock people I knew. Yeah, I mean, but back in the day, say like the first time you were on it, you know, you played your show. What's an example of the extra things you would do to make use of your time?
We would wake up, I mean, even at the tail end, like even on our 7th or 8th time, we would wake up early, probably at like 7 or 8. And a couple of the guys would go walk the line with signs telling people what time we played, sell CDs if we had them. And I would go straight to the merch table and try to, you know, say hi to people in the morning, try to sell t-shirts, and then lunch. And then, you know, sometimes your set's at 12,
right,
you know, and then, you know, it's just a random day. So we would have a meet and greet at some point in the day. And then I guess at night we would finally kind of wind down, and then we'd start it all over again. It was just Groundhog's Day.
Yeah. But that's awesome, man. That's interesting. You know, I know there's so many, even after we posted the episode last week, there's a couple people who wrote in being like, you know, it was a great episode, but the Warped Tour stuff was a little tough to listen to. And I actually almost felt bad about it, because I'm like, you know, it really did mean so much to so many people. And it was this consistent thing that would show up every summer. And even though, you know, maybe back behind it, there was some politics and business stuff to it that maybe some well-established people at the time had a lot of problems with, as anything, I mean, it presented a place for people to go and a place to hear music and a place to feel like you have some community. And, you know, I guess there's fucking worse things than that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I always think about, at least I try to think about things, especially having been in a band for so long. I try to think about things in terms of how I would have felt back in the day, you know,
prior
to being in the band and prior to being jaded and, you know, whatever. I think I remember going to Warped Tour in like 2003 and seeing like The Used and Taking Back Sunday and Matchbook Romance and like these bands that like at the time when you're, you know, when you're a freshman or sophomore in high school, like that was your musical world, you know? And so you're seeing all this happen on the same day with 30,000 other people. It was, I don't know. Yeah. It was, to say it wasn't fun would be me lying on a major scale. So it's a silly story, but I always think about it. I went to see Matchbook Romance and they were a favorite of mine in like, I don't know, freshman year of high school. And I went to see them at a show in downtown Phoenix. Yeah, and they probably played for like 50 people. And I think I've told this story.
Do you remember the venue?
It was called Modified Arts.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I vaguely remember that.
Yeah. So I'm there. And the bass player of the band, I was wearing this like Globe Skateboards hat.
Nice.
And I was, I think I was a freshman in high school. And the bass player of Matchbook Romance is like, "Hey man, I like your hat." And I swear to God, I didn't take the hat off for months after that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's like,
sure.
At the time, like that was the shit, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know. It's I'd like to remember those things sometimes where it's like, I don't know, 12 second interactions with people are very, very important, yeah. You know, and that can stick with people. So
yeah, 100%.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. I'm glad it was a positive experience for you all.
For sure.
All right, I'm sorry to veer a little, but it's something that, again, I heard a quote you said, and it was something that kind of struck a chord with me, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. You had wrote, you were said, "Singing about all these things that I wanted, and I think Live Once is all about the idea that I obtain those things and why I'm not as thankful as I should be." And I felt like, I don't know if it was what you were trying to say, but I went through a similar thing where, you know, I had set this expectation for music and my life, and essentially every problem would have been solved once I got to where I wanted to be. And then once I physically, tangibly had it all, I was still kind of felt the same and left wanting more a little bit, you know?
Sure.
I was wondering, you know, it seems like you had a similar experience, and I was wondering, you know, how that happened and how you kind of reconciled it, like, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think, it's just, I sang for years about, you know, wanting to find love and equating that to happiness. And, it took me a while to realize that, you know, being happy on your own is very, very important, you know, and
yeah,
it probably wasn't until I was happy on my own until, you know, that's when I found the person that I wanted to spend my life with, kind of on accident, you know, and I don't think it was really on accident. I think it had to be, you know, the right time. And, it's just interesting. It's like, I don't think that, I think it's really important that you're never, complacent, you know, but it's okay to be content. If right. that makes sense.
Sure,
it's okay to be appreciative and to be excited about what you have. And it doesn't mean that if you want more, that that's a negative thing. Mm. It just means that, you know, I have so much, and it's not not a materialistic way.
Right.
It's just, I'm healthy. I have a loving wife. I have, you know, great family. I have wonderful friends. It's like, yeah, I think it just took, I don't know. It's interesting being able to sing about it, you know,
right.
And then having those songs stick around. It's like, oh shit, that's what I was thinking about, you know, like,
right,
you know, wow. Okay.
Kind of like your diary is just out there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's really, yeah, I think it took singing about it to realize like, yo, you're a dumbass. Like you have this stuff, you know, it's like,
right.
So, yeah.
That's good. And you seem to be in a pretty comfortable place now. I'm happy to hear it. Well, John, that's took a lot of your time, man. I appreciate you coming on with us. And I've been asking everybody towards the end, you know, since we're all at home and, you know, stuck and depressed, is there anything, well, not necessarily depressed. You sound very peachy. Is there anything as far as like maybe a film or a book or a podcast? I know you also said you're very active interest in poetry. Is there anything you could recommend the people to help them get through their days?
Oh, man. I just started Neil Young's book.
Oh, cool.
And it's interesting reading now because I think he wrote it in 2011. Mm-hmm. So, and it's very like, it has a feel of a diary, to be honest. It's like sort of him like sitting down at his typewriter or his computer or whatever and just kind of like talking through the day. So I've been reading that. I actually just started listening, and this is I really was late to the train, but I started listening to that Casey Musgraves album. Okay. What's it called? Oh shit, where is it? Maybe Golden Hour, is that the name of one of hers?
It sounds familiar. Yeah.
Well, I'll just go with that. but I've been listening to that, and it's, I don't know. Yeah, Golden Hour. I just looked it up. But it's been on heavy repeat. And that one, I don't know, the things that she sings about and the way that she sings them has definitely resonated with me. But I have been watching Hell's Kitchen. That's been cool.
Oh, that was real.
That was real.
Oh, that was real.
That was real. Yeah. Yeah, it's been, yeah. That's like the wind down,
yeah,
of a beer and kind of zone out portion of the day.
We all need it. We all need it.
But absolutely.
It's what my mom called bubble gum for the brain, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Neil Young is a great one to listen to. Gave me, well, not personally, because I don't know the man, but the advice he always gave about careers, you know, where basically explains it as a wave, you know, and a wave that totally. You need to basically ignore while you're on it. And there's going to be ups and there's going to be downs, but as long as you mm-hmm. keep your eyes in the right place, that it'll, you'll wind up washing to shore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, John, thanks a lot again for taking the time. I really like the new record, and I really appreciate you coming on with us. It was nice to get to know you a little.
No, yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Have a good evening in the desert.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
Yeah, baby.
Not bad.
How many guests have been from Phoenix or Philly in the last like 3 months? It's been very high ratio.
Been pretty heavy, a little heavy. Next week, I'm not going to say who the guest is, but they're from New Jersey.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. But they don't live there. They moved somewhere better. Now they live in California. Mm-hmm. And it's not Jeff Rosen.
How many people from New Jersey moved to California? That's
probably a lot.
I bet more people from New Jersey. Well, more people, I bet, make it in California from New Jersey than any other state. I would bet money on that.
I think the percentage is high, but I'd also beg the question, how many come back? And that percentage is also high. So I think there's something about New Jersey that lures you back in. I know wherever you're from, like Colonial Cape Cod or something, you guys really, you know, look down on what we do down here, you know, in the melting pot. You just wanted...
Well, we didn't call it Colonial at the time. It just was Colonial.
What are you wearing down there? See, right now, I imagine under this desk, you're wearing those little, like, pastel pink Vineyard Vine shorts.
Yes.
Open-toed shoes.
Yeah.
Or yachting shoes. And
I have a woven cotton braided anklet.
Yeah. And a and a smoking pipe that says Nantucket on it. Well, that was a fun interview with John. Very illuminating. Yeah.
Seriously, though, the Maine, you probably know, they're a great band, but like, I really like his new stuff. I like his solo stuff that he's doing. And you want to catch up with him, you can catch him at The Fifth John on Instagram, The Maine Band on Instagram, The Maine on Twitter and Facebook. Of course, we are going off track everywhere. And, you know, go check out that Patreon if you're into it.
Yeah.
If you want to become part of the gang, leave us a good review on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Benny would prefer that they were a little blue.
Well, listen.
If they were sexy.
Sexually explicit, if possible. Again, I know hot oils always come up in my thinking, but especially right now because I couldn't help. I saw some sexy photos of John when I was doing research for this. And I was like, what if we just poured a little? If we had him in studio, I would have asked to pour a little hot wax on his chest.
You would not.
I would have. I would have asked.
The fucking Howard Stern
I
over here.
I promise you, I would have asked. He could have said no, but yeah, I would have asked. There's no shame in this game, baby.
Well, Benny, there will come a day when all of this will pass and we will be in the studio together breathing each other's
dirty
air molecules.
Dirty air molecules.
And pouring hot wax on our guest's chest.
Listen. It's the 90s, man. I'm trying to get into it, you know? All right. Well, everyone, thanks for coming and tuning in. Next week's going to be great.
We'll see you there.
It's another week going off track.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.